coming up on AI Having a Clue.
The AI wars go up a gear with some espionage at play.
You are an absolute fraud.
All the papers are going. Chris is back.
We're talking AI tech billionaires. Get your ass out of Silicon Valley. It's ridiculous.
You sound like Elon.
Multi-modal. Why do you need cameras world in your ears?
And George takes to the streets.
If you got in a whale, would you be able to survive? And then what hole would you leave through? And ChatGPT was not very clear.
Hello and welcome to AI Having a Clue. I am AI novice George Butler, and this is the podcast that many people actually compare to the Brit Awards. Obviously, pertinent timing because, you know, we've got shocks and surprises by the week. Like the Brit Awards. We've got big name guests. The Brits have Harry Styles. We have Phil Rowley. And, I've got a man sat opposite me wearing a rather fetching Union Jack dress. Welcome our AI expert, James Chandler.
Very good. Very good. Which one will the Union Jack dress?
Cherry Halliwell.
Cherry. Yeah. Ginger spice.
Are you going to wear that for the whole show?
I will see how things go. It is slightly restricted. The corset is very restricted, I must say.
Right. Well, let's move on very quickly from that and tell you what is coming up in the podcast today. Obviously, the latest news from the world of AI. It's quite broad and diverse this week. There's a bit of espionage, which we're going to come on to between America and China. Some politics at play as well, and we're talking physicals. Is that the right words?
Physicals, where you don't want to say the word wearables. Not many glasses, but lots of other wearables as well.
So this is, I mean, we're going to get onto it, but it's quite a big, potentially a game-changing thing for the artificial intelligence
sector.
We of course as well have your latest listener question and James's big thing, plus a brand new segment coming to the show as well. First, though, we're going to say a big thank you to our subscribers over on Patreon. And this week, we want to say a big thank you to Martin Kemp, who is part of the AI Club over on Patreon.
Oh.
You can, yeah, lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, nice.
You can, not that one.
Oh, I was going to say, okay.
No.
Goal!
Yeah, no, different one. He's probably now left the Patreon Club because he's probably sick of that.
Thanks, Martin.
Thank you, Martin. And you can join Martin in the club where you get a whole load of bonus goodies, extra content. You get an AI Having a Clue t-shirt and loads more. Head to patreon.com/AI Having a Clue. Also, stay up to date with the latest news with our free Substack. We're rounding up all of the latest stories. And also, we often do a deep dive into our guest from that week as well. You can find out more at AIHaven'tAClue.com and hit the big Substack button there to subscribe. Enough plugging things, James. Before we get to the news, can we just start with the outrageous Sam Altman quotes? Did you see this? Did you read this?
Is this the one about him saying, sort of comparing training AI models to humans and it taking 20 years?
Yeah, and I guess a question that is time and time again proposed to Sam Altman is the energy question and how much energy AI takes, et cetera, et cetera. He's come back with a slightly unique and, I mean, quite incredible line on this. Have you got the quote?
Yeah, he says, people talk about how much energy it takes to train an AI model, but it also takes a lot of energy to train a human. It takes like 20 years of life and all the food you eat during that time before you get smart.
What is he
on about? I don't
know.
Is he old enough to have a sort of a crisis of... It's
the
most convenient thing
ever.
Look, this is nonsense. I took the liberty of asking a maths friend, this is a maths graduate friend. Uh-huh. I was like, look, just do the numbers for me. She was saying that over 20 years, a human consumes about 21,000 kilowatt hours in food, which sounds like a lot. Mm. The brain itself, the human brain, only uses about 20 watts. So when you add it up over 20 years, that's around 3,500 kilowatt hours over the whole period.
Why are they friends with you? That's
and so 3,500 kilowatt hours over a 20-year period. Obviously, that's not used exclusively for learning. That keeps you alive as well, breathing, doing all that sort of stuff. If you then look at AI... OpenAI specifically, GPT-3, bear in mind we're on 5.2, which is probably even thirstier on the kilowatt hours. GPT-3 alone is likely to have used over 1 million kilowatt hours just to train it versus just 3,500 kilowatt hours for a human in 20 hours. So even when you, and it's a kind of an interesting way to do it, but even if you do it on the maths alone, it's a kind of a nonsense, very convenient statement by our friend.
But also, Has Sam Altman got to the stage now where he looks at AI bots and humans as like level entities? Mm. And when Karen Howell came on the show, she talked about the kind of the cult at OpenAI, which ultimately will lead to this super intelligent AI being more intelligent than humans. And this is what it's coming across. It's coming across like Sam Altman places humans almost below artificial intelligence. It's insane. The guy needs some daylight, needs some fresh air, needs to take a holiday. Just go have a few weeks with interraining Sam Altman. Get back in the real world. Get your ass out of Silicon Valley. It's ridiculous.
You sound like Elon. Sounds like an Elon tweet or something.
There ain't much I agree with Elon Musk on, but maybe the fact that Sam Altman is slightly too deep into this world is perhaps the only thing.
I would always say this is, you know, careful. Like, it's a quote out of a bigger piece. You have to be sort of slightly careful. You don't have the context of what he said before and after. But even, you know, even with that, it does... It's an interesting comparison, which is a little convenient for him, given the question.
And I won't lie, when Karen the other week was telling us all this, and if you missed it, and it's well worth a listen, because she's a proper expert in the space. I think it's episode, was it 39?
Correct.
So not that long ago. As amazing as she was, there was also part of me in my brain going like, yeah, but it's you know, this whole thing about OpenAI being empirical and empire building and a cult. It sounds like it could be, but I mean, this sort of quote, you go, well... It sounds like she had it spot on. Spot on. Mm. This does lead quite nicely. I mean, you couldn't make this up. It's almost like we planned this,
well,
stuff, James, because it leads us nicely onto next week. We have a very special edition of the show where we are looking at the stories behind the AI wars. And it's a special next week, starting with Elon Musk versus Sam Altman. Probably the biggest rivalry in tech. We are deep diving into that, looking at the history, looking at the journey. And actually, I didn't really think about this before we thought of doing this, but actually, these two people are two of the most powerful people on planet Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
We know a lot about Donald Trump and Keir Starmer and Barack Obama and Theresa May. You know, we know a lot about the people that we think traditionally run the world that we live in. Probably time that we start to know a little bit more about the people that probably actually are and will continue to be major decision makers.
It is a different level of scrutiny, isn't it, for someone who's in kind of public office versus these guys who, you know, effectively running, you know, albeit massive ones, running private companies. So the scrutiny is sort of slightly different, but nonetheless, no less important.
Okay, next week, please do check that out. It's going to be really, really great. We've got a friend of the show, Jack Benjamin, back guiding us through that story. It's going to be fantastic. James, are you ready for something a little bit different?
Just a little bit different.
A little bit different, because I took to the streets to chat to the general public to hear their views on AI and to play a game we called Chat Roulette. We played it on the show before. The question was simple. What was the last thing that you asked ChatGPT? So what was the last thing that you searched into ChatGPT?
Oh, my last search was really boring, actually. It was to find a gradient of a colour.
That is really, really boring. Did it help?
Yeah, it really helped. It's not particularly exciting, but it's just to do with recipes and not having to scour through all those websites where they write an essay about the recipe before telling you what it is.
The ingredients is like right at the bottom of... Yeah.
So just looking at that to cut out all the nonsense, really.
What was the recipe?
It was to do with the chicken curry.
Okay. And how was it out of 10?
It was pretty standard, but it was all right.
Maybe I tried to use it to find recipes. Like, I was trying to figure out my meal plan. It gave me a whole, like maybe 5-6 of ways that I could plan my meal prep for the week. But personally, I didn't like the responses because I wanted something that was more kind of unique.
Did it deliver in the end?
Not quite.
I think it was a wristwatch brand on the Perplexity, actually.
The question I'll ask you is, do you use AI?
No.
No.
I don't see the need to, because I do like architecture.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm cheating on myself.
Really, what was the last real thing you searched? Not the sanitized version for the camera.
The last thing I really searched. If you got in a whale, would you be able to survive? And then what hole would you lead through? And ChatGPT was not very clear in its answer, but I think it...
I'm assuming maybe there's not that much data to train it on for that one.
Yeah, I think it's a real point that they should be looking at. I would like these answers.
Do you use it for everything, or are you a bit cautious on it?
No, a bit cautious. It was one of the few times, actually, but I think I might use it more in the future.
I don't necessarily... I've had issues in the past with hallucination and things like that, and I try not to put too much faith in it. But for things which can be kind of verified, I find it useful, yeah.
Very interesting. It was interesting to chat to real folk like me, not AI losers like you.
You know what real chat roulette is? You remember chat roulette webcams and all that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Might need another name for it.
You could have told me that before I went onto the street and...
Still a thing. Yeah. Don't hit start
Don't hit,
on
please
that.
Don't hit. No, it's not on the start. Company Wi-Fi. Put that away. You could have mentioned that before I went down to chat to the general public, but no, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But interesting, though, genuinely, to hear a few little tidbits about what people are actually using their AI for, and it tends to be as mundane as expected, cooking recipes and work stuff. But also interesting, the amount of people that we spoke to, and we didn't capture all this on the mic, but the amount of people that we spoke to who do not use ChatGPT, who doesn't use AI. Well, you say that, but there was quite an amazing study which actually backs up that viewpoint, which you actually did share, to be fair, showcasing the extraordinary amount of people who do not use AI across the world. I've got it open here, James, right? So out of the 8.1 billion humans on planet Earth, get this, a tiny, tiny margin of like 2 odd million people use AI for coding. Less than 25 million, between 15 and 25 million people pay for AI.
Yeah.
That leaves 1.4 billion people using a free chatbot, but never using AI, almost 7 billion people.
Yeah, huge. 84% of people never used AI. And you might see this. I mean, it's doing the rounds on LinkedIn at the moment, probably other social media as well. And it's this grid of dots. There's 2,500 dots. Each represents a segment of the world's population. And the grey dots, which have never used AI, are pretty, pretty vast. And I saw someone talking about this who... And this is so hard because we're just in this bubble. We're talking about it all the time. They were saying, you compare it to the internet in 2004. And I remember 2004 because I graduated from university. I think I was using the internet for like email and Yahoo pull.
You know, Yahoo what?
Yahoo pool. You never played Yahoo pool?
Oh, I thought you said something very different.
No, Yahoo pool. Snooker.
You said you used to use chat roulette back in 2000. That's what you said a minute
different.
ago.
I told you that in confidence.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. We wasn't streaming on YouTube. Yeah, Social media wasn't a thing yet. Like, we are so on the cusp of something here. Like, it's sort of hard to imagine. We don't know what we don't know. There's going to be AI in 5 years' time is like an impossible question. Don't know where it's going to be, but kind of exciting.
Yeah, and as we've seen over the last year, like, things are moving very quickly. The public discussion on this is growing. The narrative is shifting. Next week, the BBC across the TV, across radio and online are doing a big AI week. Have you seen this?
Yeah, nice.
I mean, it's going to be another way in which, you know, the nation can discover a little bit more about AI. Hopefully, people watch the stuff on the telly and hear it on Jeremy Vine and then, you know, they're looking for a podcast to find out a little bit more.
Yeah, very good.
Artificial intelligence. We're here.
Do you know?
This podcast. Right, let's move on to the news from the world of AI this week, starting with some espionage. As a US AI giant Anthropic have accused a Chinese rival of, get this, mass data theft.
Yeah, Anthropic, obviously Claude is the LLM. They've accused three Chinese AI firms, DeepSeek, which we've talked about a lot, Moonshot AI and Minimax, of using quotation marks distillation techniques to extract capabilities from Claude at an industrial scale. And for the uninitiated, distillation is basically when a smaller AI model learns basically by copying large ones. So it's kind of a common practice in AI, but as I say, industrial scale is the important information here. Anthropic is saying that these three companies carried out around 16 million interactions using 24,000 fake accounts, basically siphoning off all of the good outputs to make their own systems better, but doing it in a slightly sort of controversial, very cheap, very quick way. Again, sort of not seeking permission, doing it, not even seeking forgiveness here.
Is there an element of pot kettle with Anthropic complaining about people taking their data to grow their intelligence? Isn't that exactly how all these LLMs were built?
Well, yeah, you can get into that argument because they need raw materials in order to function. An AI without content or articles or anything really can't really be trained on much. So yeah, the very premise of it is kind of interesting. They're saying here, though, clearly at play, we've got this kind of America versus China war going on in the background. The Chinese firms we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the pod, you know, move very, very quickly, maybe are not bedraggled by or held back by some of the same principles that some of the US companies claim that they probably hold around, you know, the way to do things. But it's kind of interesting. OpenAI, of course, a rival of Anthropic, but certainly in the same boat here. They've made some similar accusations. And you really are seeing play out here this kind of US-China AI arms race. At some point, you could probably see Donald wading into this. You could probably see some sort of regulation, threats of tariffs.
Maybe he'll send the ice hockey team on them.
See a video.
His new bros.
Yeah, man. Mm. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Got to be a good winner as well as a good loser. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, James, Microsoft, they have allegedly leaked confidential emails through their AI tool Copilot.
Yeah, they've blamed a configuration error, of all things, that's looked at emails that have been marked confidential in things like sent items and drafts, which usually get held out of being summarized by Copilot. But in this instance, it looked at all of them. So yeah, stuff that has been marked confidential, has been sucked up by Copilot, summarized, and yeah, not a good look for Microsoft.
Oh, I mean, it's shocking on a few accounts. Firstly, it's this sort of thing which is like the blocker for people really letting AI into their lives, because we just don't have total confidence in the fact that if we say, don't look at this, don't read this, yeah, don't use this data, then it, well, clearly it can and does do it. But also, this must have got some people in trouble. Can you imagine, like, you know, you're writing an email and it's supposed to be private, confidential. You're slagging somebody off, and all of a sudden, it's now part of the AI ethos.
Well, anything around compensation, anything kind of HR issues. I just think, sort of like generally, the guardrails around marking something as confidential and doing that on the basis that you don't want it to be tracked or summarised, and that happening, yeah, it does undermine, I think, probably a lot of hard work that Microsoft have done. You know, and these are always the same, these trust issues. You only need one crack to appear in these things, no matter how much you've spent, the teams that you've got behind it, or the efforts that you've gone to. It does feel like it slightly undermines what they've done.
Do you let AI, do you let Copilot into your email to summarise and to help you?
Not so much in my inbox. I'm thinking about using a inbox specific AI. I'm getting lots of ads at the moment for a few to try and make sense of my inbox, which just feels like a running sore at times.
What would that do? How would that work?
I think try and understand the stuff that's important, the stuff that it can probably maybe reply on my behalf with my permission. Maybe it could categorize stuff, put stuff in folders for me. I love the idea of Inbox Zero. If anyone listening to this is at Inbox Zero, oh, like I just want to be...
Does anyone have Inbox Zero? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I work with someone who's Inbox Zero. Stuff comes in and it gets filed and put away, but it's a kind of manual process. If AI could do that for me, you know, I live and die by how many unread emails that I've got. And if I could change that, I think my life would be wholly more fuller and better.
Wow. Well, what an exciting life that you have, James. do keep us up to date with that, because that's kind of quite interesting to see a real, like, applicable use case of AI. So let us know.
Is Copilot going to be on the shortlist for that? Don't I get back to you?
Maybe not now. okay, we talked last week about Keir Starmer, and he seems to be wanting to take the fight to Silicon Valley and big tech a little bit more than maybe a few months ago when they were very bullshy, the UK government, about their support for AI, especially in the United Kingdom. But there is an online safety campaigner who just simply doesn't think the Prime Minister is doing enough.
Yeah, the person in question here, Beban Kidron, she's a lord. She sits in the House of Lords. She's accused him of being too slow and too accommodating towards big tech, particularly on social media, and of course AI regulation, as you say. It's kind of interesting, this one. You know, obviously the Prime Minister, he's got children, they're both teenagers, so you know, he's sort of living through this, probably understands the challenges kind of firsthand, and she slightly criticized him for that, which I sort of don't buy. If he didn't have children, I think maybe fair enough. It's clear there are risks for children here. It's clear that online safety is important. It's fair to say he's launched a consultation on banning social media access for under 16s, much like we've seen in Australia.
Do you think that might happen? Do you think there's a chance that that could go through?
I don't know. I'm sort of thinking about when Sinead came in and talked to us from the IAB. I think the approach is probably sensible. I mean, you couldn't write it off given that it's happened in Australia. I mean, different market.
How's it? Is there any feedback? I know it's reasonably soon into that that change, but has there been any feedback from your, you know, from your expertise in the role that you do about how that has gone in Australia?
I think things that I've read have mainly focused on the fact that, you know, despite the ban, people are still finding their way around it. I think that was always probably, people were always going to write
that story. Some people always will find a way, but I'm sure there are many, many people
who
can't find a way.
Absolutely. I think you're probably right. I think it's probably too soon to make a call on it just yet. So, yes, he's launched his consultation on a ban. He is saying he's made a pledge that he's going to challenge, you know, big tech companies over this addictive platform design. So this kind of infinite scroll features that, you know, keep you very, very sticky on the platform. Yeah, I think the criticism is sort of slightly unfair. And again, it's always for governments to get this balance of accusations of being too slow versus kind of, you know, cracking on hard and fast with a regulation that maybe doesn't make sense. So it feels like you can't kind of win here. But I thought the accusation around, you know, you don't really understand it despite having children was a strange one.
You think if you did a straw poll of the nation, you were on the street and you said to people...
You're the one going on the street.
Well, man. That's true. With
Davina.
With the formerly called Chat Roulette. you said to people, ban social media for under 16s, yes or no? Is there a massive majority, do you think, in favour of banning it or actually potentially completely the other way?
I think parents. I mean, I talk to people at school gates and drop off and, you know, my children are a lot younger, but I don't think they have much appetite for contending with a world where that could be problematic. So I think parents might be in favour of it. Tell you wouldn't be in favour, probably under 16s.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we also forget, like, generally speaking, people, they don't like being told what they can and can't do.
No. It would be quite a move by this government, I think, to effectively restrict you on what you can do online. I mean, I can't really think of anything, particularly as it relates to online, that would have happened before. It's not like tobacco, it's not like alcohol or drugs or something like that.
And I suppose that's the thing that campaigners like Beban Kidron would say is that, well, it is kind of actually like those products, because if you look at the negative impacts it's having, the lives that, you know, are potentially being lost because of it, then... So I suppose that's the rebuttal. But yeah, I think it would be a bit of a shock to see a big change like that come in.
The other thing you've got to say is that... Imagine we were sat here and it hadn't happened in Australia. It would be unprecedented. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it has, I mean, there is precedent now. So, yeah, going to be interesting.
Well, look, the positive news for Keir Starmer when it comes to this topic is that there are going to be less devices going forward that are, like, on us and with us the whole time. And technology is going to, you know, actually chill out a little bit. We're going to see a lot less of it. It's not going to be on our eyes, fingers, bodies. In our house. Oh no, wait! There's a slew of announcements this week about wearables.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Speak for yourself, James Chandler. There's three big ones that we're going to talk about. There's a robot, which we're going to come on to. But should we start with OpenAI and Apple?
Yeah, a whole list of things. I mean, how long have you got? Your favourite. So there's six devices that OpenAI are pushing.
And let's just say, James, Apple doing devices, well, we know that. Yeah, there might be some new stuff coming, but this is brand new territory for OpenAI. They are ChatGPT right now, but things are about to change.
And the secret sauce in that is the fact that this hardware bit of the company is being led by a bunch of former Apple employees, namely at the top of the pile, Johnny Ive, who we've talked about, you know, effectively Steve Jobs' right-hand man. Architect of things like the iPhone, watch, iPad, all this sort of stuff. They've got a bunch of things coming. Smart glasses, your favourite, presumably similar to the kind of the Ray-Bans type thing that Meta have been doing. They've got a smart speaker, so rival Echo.
Really?
A smart lamp, which could be linked to what they're doing around health, that could be tracking sleep, could be linked to sort of circadian rhythms and all that sort of stuff, if that's your thing. They've got an earbud, which I quite like, and I think quite obvious. This idea of hearables has been quite a little assistant that talks to you in your ear. The smart pin, which I think they've talked about, is kind of this pendant which sits on you. It's a screenless device, potentially. Apparently, Apple have been working on that as well. And the smart pen, which feels something like I saw in Moonraker or something like that.
What's which a could smart be quite, pen? Like James Bond style. Just,
tap it three times. Someone's up. Bomb goes off or something. It could be quite good. Wow. Presumably, it would look at your handwriting and synthesize that perfectly into notes that could then be queried or form a prompt or something like that.
Wow. Okay. A lot of products. Anything in there that's particularly surprising or even exciting to you?
I think glasses, we kind of know where that's going. Speakers, we're familiar with. The lamp, I don't know. I like the earbud, the idea that this is just something that talks to me and I talk to it. It's the closest I think it gets to assistant because it can literally be with you all the time and it's not like glasses, like I kind of need to wear it and, you know, it's going to layer on vision or something like that. I kind of like the earbud, utterly intrigued by the pen as well, I think.
What's Apple got up their sleeve then?
Oh, well. On the Apple menu, we've got glasses.
You can just small glasses.
Yes, but
I'll bore off.
Apple making glasses. I mean, these things are going to be beautiful.
Okay, one thing I would... all right, question for you. I know what my ranking would be. If you could own a pair of smart glasses.
Nice.
We're not talking about tech. We're talking about, like, you've got to rep this brand. They're on your face.
Yeah.
You've got Apple, OpenAI, and Meta.
Yeah.
Who's the guy behind those glasses at Meta?
Or like the engineer?
No, the guy that runs the show, the top guy. The owner.
Meta?
Yeah, the guy who owns Meta.
Mark Zuckerberg. Oh,
the Zuck, sorry, that was it. I forgot.
I think I'm contractually obliged I can walk out at any point.
Do we?
If that happens.
Didn't we have a jingle for that?
Probably. Probably.
If you could rank glasses, which ones are you wearing, which ones are you binning, which ones are you not sure about?
Well, we know what we're in for with Meta and Ray-Ban. And they're incredible glasses. They've obviously got the Oakley ones as well. I mean, you can't really get more iconic than, you know, Ray-Ban Wayfarer.
No, if you're a 48-year-old man.
I don't know. You'd place a decent bet on Apple doing a decent pair of specs, wouldn't you? I mean, everything else is beautiful.
Come on, put your money where your mouth is. Yeah, what's number one?
I'd go Apple. I'd probably go Apple.
And which ones are you binning off? What's three? Meta
or see what
or
comes
OpenAI.
From OpenAI. It's tricky. It's got Johnny Ive. This is the guy behind
which,
the
which what's going in the work? What are you ranking the worst?
I'd go probably Apple. Very close second, Meta Ray-Bans. OpenAI, don't know. They're not a hardware company. This is what you got to think. They haven't got any skin in that game.
Yeah, fair, that makes sense. I'm with you on Apple. You'd have to pay me a lot of money to put Meta glasses on my face.
It's not just glasses, of course. The AirPods are getting AI powers, even
don't
more
they
than
already
what
have AI powers.
Well, yeah, they've got the translation thing, which is kind of amazing. We're only on version 3. They're thinking that you could add cameras in here.
It's so your AirPods
with the combination of cameras and microphones. and speakers. You get into this sort of nice multimodal
world. Why do you need cameras
world.
In your ears?
Well, you know, they'd be sort of poking out, doing what, sort of, like a sort of an owl's ears or something.
Apple love a camera. Like, oh, yeah, why, what's different with the product? Oh, there's like a sixth camera added to it.
Yeah,
like,
nice.
I don't need a camera in my ears.
I'd find another 300 quid to pay for AirPods.
Is there anything else that Apple
do? They've got a pendant, which is not dissimilar, I think, to maybe the smart pin that OpenAI are pushing. But again, screenless. And I think gets into this world of, you know, this was the whole thing with the Apple Watch. It became this kind of luxury item, you know, the type with Hermes and this kind of thing. I think jewellery and connected jewellery remains pretty untapped. I think if you can make it very high-end, as Apple have skin in the game in doing, I think could be very interesting. There's a few AI pendants out there that you can find, but again, I think what Apple do could elevate it. Maybe it'd just be a glorified AirTag or something like that, so you can just find people more easily.
They'll probably stick a camera in it.
If in doubt, whack a camera in it.
And then what about that robot then? It was Neo. We've talked about Neo before, haven't we?
Yeah, we did. This is the most sort of human-like robot or humanoid. So Neo Gamma is the prototype. It's going to do things like cleaning, like vacuuming, like laundry. I think you were quite excited about before.
Oh, I would love it if someone could clean my house.
It's going to do all the chores. It's sort of the equivalent of getting your LLM to do all of your grunt work, like sort of timesheets and, you know, expenses and all that, but it's actually happening in the home. The most interesting thing about this is it's got a beige 3D knitted body, soft coverings, and elastic motor-controlled hands to make the robot look more approachable and safer for human interaction.
As in, like, it couldn't, like, beat you up because its hands aren't made of metal.
It just kind of looks, you know, it's not like some of the stuff that you see coming out of CES, which are just these sort of robot...
That's the Vegas.
Robot wolves, yeah, jumping out at you.
CES is the Vegas tech.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's an LLM built into it. It can do speech. It can do body language interpretation. It can have conversations with you.
But just to confirm, it can also Hoover.
It can do Billy basics.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
It's going to be quite an expensive Hoover. I think you could just get a little whizzy round thing, Dyson or something.
I want Neo to come over my house.
Okay. Yeah, I think at last thing they're about 10 grand. But yeah, you fill your boots.
I mean, I could probably Hoover for that. wait for that price to drop a little bit. Right, final story for now. It's all about Google's Gemini, who have added an AI music generator to their wheelhouse.
Yeah, Lyria 3 they've produced. It's an AI music generator, and it can produce 30-second high-fidelity tracks across a number of different genres, and prompt-wise, you can give it words clearly, but also audio, images, videos, that sort of stuff as well. It's free for everyone who is over 18. You can get it in the desktop Gemini app, but it gets even better when you've got the pro version as well. You know, clearly, this starts to throw up some copyright concerns, as we talked about things like Suno, which is a kind of a rival and been in market a lot longer. Google have said they've been very mindful of copyright and partner agreements. And they say that it's not designed to mimic specific artists. And if you feel like it has infringed on any copyright, you can report it.
Ooh, very interesting. Mm. What do you think we'll see the likes of ChatGPT follow quite quickly and have a music generating tool embedded into what they do?
Yeah, I mean, music generation feels fairly niche. It's not kind of in the same way as like writing something or creating video. So I don't know. I mean, I think it, you know, likely that they don't want to be left behind on this. And clearly if there's Suno and others and now Google, you know, expect others to follow. Yeah, why not?
So yesterday we had a message. We each received a message. Mm. I'm assuming you received the same message about this new addition to Gemini. Mm. Molly, producer Molly, would you like to tell us more?
Okay, so I sent you both an anonymous message.
Yeah, a bit creepy that.
I didn't mind it.
Earlier this week, both asking you for a 30-second song each using Google Gemini.
30.
Oh, was it 30? I just
very specific.
Song.
Mine was in caps, 30, 30 seconds.
You wanted a, well, you obviously told James that. You didn't tell me. You just asked me for a song. You wanted a song based off our podcast, AI Having a Clue, and I've delivered that.
Yeah, and I've delivered it in 30 seconds. So.
Well, let's, should we, what's the deal here? Are we both going to play our songs and then you're going to crown the winner?
I mean, you want me to play your two songs that are 1 minute each and...
You want to say
I'll pick one of them, okay?
Okay, thanks.
We'll play one of, we'll each play one, how about this? We'll each play one song and then you crown the winner.
Nice.
Okay.
But look, I want it on record right here, right now.
That you didn't meet the brief.
I accept the fact that I missed the 30-second part. But I want it on record, Molly, that you're not going to downmark me because of it.
Okay. Okay.
Fine. James, do you want to go? I'll tell you what, because of that, I'll give you the... Do you want to play your song first or do you want to play your song second?
Let's hear yours first. We've got time, so...
Hey, I haven't a clue. Yeah, we're breaking. Laughing with the bots while we're learning something new. Stay curious, stay cool. Yeah, we're having a clue when we're breaking down the news and a big thing or two.
James in the lab coat, AI sensei mode. George asking questions like, wait, is this a code? Expert verse, novice, yeah, you know how it's at. Funny thing is, George still beat him in the challenge we had. This up, this, suck that, George really knows his stuff. James says, that's not real, but we all know what's up. Mark Zuckerberg, he goes by the Zuck. Yeah, it's true, mind blown on the mic. What's an expert to do? Stay curious.
Come on! Yeah!
It was long, wasn't it? Kept going.
Okay, James, what's your take? What's your thoughts?
It's long. It had a sort of High School Musical quality to it. Maybe a sort of...
Oh, thank you. That's a huge compliment.
I don't know if you remember the artist Dizzy Rascal. I say it had a little sort of smattering of Dizzy Rascal.
Sorry, it was both Dizzy Rascal and High School Musical in one.
It was a sort of, I think mashup. Yeah, that's the sort of vibe I got.
What
was the prompt?
Any Imagine Dragons in the prompt?
Oh, Imagine Dragons, that. Yeah.
I
actually thought, when they started rapping, I thought you'd like taken James's voice and yours. It sort of sounded like you both.
Maybe I had.
It's copyrighted, so
maybe I had.
No, he couldn't. I can't for him.
Some great lyrics in there as well.
There's something about the Zuck.
I haven't a clue.
Zuck this, Zuck that.
Yeah.
George showing love. James says that's not real, but the proof's from above. Okay. Mark Zuckerberg, yeah, the nickname is true. Mind blown on the mic. What's an expert to do?
Unbelievable. I hope they come for you. I really do.
Right. James, should we hear yours?
Yeah. Ready? Be short.
I haven't a clue. Stay curious. I haven't a clue. Stay curious.
Sorry, I just remind me, what were the lyrics for that?
Well, it's a hook. It's catchy, isn't it? That's the sort of Pete Waterman, that's what he does, isn't it?
Pete Waterman.
That's what he would have done.
Where these musical references are wild. Pete Waterman, Dizzy Rascal, with High School Musical, space of 30 seconds.
This had, it had a bit of a, it was playful. It was a sort of if.
Oh, it was a bit shite.
If Kate Nash was big today, that's the sort of thing she'd be doing. Yeah.
Kate Nash will sue you for saying that.
That came with a nice dance as well.
There we go. You've heard of the K-pop Demon Hunters. That is the level I think this could get to.
Ah, oh, dearie me. Okay, right. Molly, you've heard both our songs. It's time for you to decide which tune is going to be crowned winner of the AI Music Challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, for catchiness alone, I'm going to have to go with James's.
Oh, yes!
I'm sorry.
Super.
This is absolutely outrageous.
No.
His song had the same line on repeat. It didn't even have any different lyrics.
You know. So it's catchy.
Yeah.
Like,
I think you overthought it, mate.
All I'm saying is my second song was way better. Molly sabotaged me.
We can all have a second
Molly sabotaged me. She picked the wrong song. At the end of this podcast, you will hear my second song. That's what I'm going to say. I don't need to say any more on that.
Well, I hope listeners hang around for that.
That's if I put it
you
in.
You are an absolute fraud.
All the papers are going. Chris is back.
James, apparently music is your big thing now.
Yeah, well.
What else you got for us?
This is a nice one. Sticker box. It's a...
AI Sorry, it was just stuck in my head. It's catchy, Molly!
Sticker box. It's a physical AI-powered device for children. It turns spoken ideas into real printable stickers. It's not like something, a site that you go to. It's an actual piece of hardware that you can put on your table. You push a button, you speak the idea, and it prints it. It's got a screen, but the screen is really to give you the preview of what it's going to print. So it's not like an iPad or something. You can't do anything else with this. You can't go onto the internet. You can't doom scroll on social media. You can't, you know, look at anything that you shouldn't be. It's got limits around what the AI will generate to keep everything age appropriate. It's got a bunch of safety filters on there as well, and it will only listen when you push the button. It's $99, made in California. Currently only available in the US, so great for some of our US listeners. But Stickerbox say that it should encourage descriptive spoken prompts, and it's designed with child-specific content filters and minimal data retention.
So you just press a button, you say something, and it prints the... So if I press the button and said, Molly is corrupt, George's song was better, it would just print on a sticker in a second.
Fall foul of some of the safety filters, though, interestingly. But
Are there safety filters?
Well, apparently so. So yes, if you do ask for something that, you know, could be violent or inappropriate for children, then it kind of won't do it. I really like this, partly because my children are obsessed with using ChatGPT to create things for them. So it might be like, so they love gladiators. They like doing gladiators, colouring in things, or they want to do dot to dots, or they want to create animals or creatures and that sort of stuff. And, you know, obviously, great, but, you know, very, very thin use of ChatGPT, needs me to do it for them, all that kind of thing. This thing, I could see them kind of doing this and they can colour in what comes out. There are obvious, I wouldn't even say red flags, but, you know, things with this is like, can anything be 100% safe? Like, AI could interpret something and spit you out something kind of weird.
Like our friends at Set at 16 the other day with the AI teddy bears, they were kind of saying, oh, it's a slippery slope, da, 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 da.
Bang on. This is full squarely in their sort of AI tools crosshairs, I would say.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they'd be buying many of these.
I don't think so. There's also this whole thing, I think, around, you know, we've talked about it around sort of that muscle around writing and creativity, and how if you're just pumping everything into LLM of choice, then you're going to lose that. I think it's probably the same with kids. You don't want to develop this over-reliance on tech being able to create it for you. There's a whole bunch of research that shows, you know, things like drawing your own pictures is good for memory, it's good for planning, it's good for problem solving, visual perception, all these kinds of things which will come into their own later on in life. And the other slight thing, I guess, is this kind of instant gratification you get, you know, smash the button, say the thing, print it out times a million, probably isn't great. But I think on the whole, this is a pretty decent thing. There's a really good Reddit thread about this where the owners of Stickerbox are on there. They're answering loads of questions that maybe parents have got, people want to know. This has been copied by loads of people as well. So there's different companies that have set things up which copies it, which is a bit of an odd how good it is. But I quite like this. As immediately when I saw it, I thought I must talk about it on the pod.
I imagine we're going to see that, this AI-ification of toys, and I suppose all products really over the next few years just happen a lot more regularly.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you could pick one up on your Holly Bobs when you're next in the US.
Right, time now for our listener question. If you've got a question that you would like to ask James Chan, well, do get in touch with us. AIhaveanaclue@gmail.com is the place to do so. If you get your question asked on the podcast, you and yourself, you get play it! AI Having a Clue. It's really nice, though. I have a clue t-shirt. Oh, the only thing better than that little bit of jingle is the t-shirt itself.
Love a jingle.
Yasser, hello. You've just won yourself an AI Having a Clue t-shirt. Yasser from N16.
Where's N16?
I think that's Nottingham, because I went to university in Nottingham.
Is it?
I'm sure.
I assume North London. but maybe it is Nottingham.
I'm sure my postcode used to start with N16.
Nuneaton? Nottingham is NO, probably, surely.
I think it's probably like Stoke Newington.
Brilliant! Yes!
Is it?
Stokey.
Maybe parts of Dulston.
Fantastic. Nottingham lad, doesn't NG, you know your own postcode?
It was NG. NG16 used to be my postcode.
Of course it is.
Anywho, hi Yasser from tracking you down now, Stoke Newington, parts of Dulston, asking this question. He's got to give us his address and get a t-shirt anyway. We'll find out in due course.
Just put N16 on the envelope, it's fine.
Right. Are AI tech billionaires actually trying to fix the world, or are they just building ways to get even richer? Ooh, tasty question.
Yes, some of them, I think to their credit, are trying to fix things. There's lots of stuff around drug discovery and development, some of the stuff on the climate, a bunch of modelling things like that. There's accessibility tools for people with disabilities, a whole load of stuff happening in education. So I think lots of founders don't get into this game to become rich. I think they're quite visionary types. They think in these very long-term horizons. Some of them have given away lots of money, or they've invested a serious amount of cash of their own. Elon, for example, say what you like about Elon.
And we will.
We usually do. Co-founded OpenAI as a not-for-profit with Sam Altman, obviously. He donated $100 million of his own money in early funding. Questionable whether his initial thought was to sort of maximise returns. I'm going to give him credit and say probably not. Someone else, Dustin Moskovitz, who is the lesser-known co-founder of Facebook.
Who's the other one? Sorry.
It's too easy. Just batting them away. Set it up in 2004 and then exited in 2008. Dustin's not this sort of loud, he's not haranguing people on social media, but he has given billions of the money that he made from Facebook into things like vaccine research. He's done policy work on pandemic readiness. He's even put money into grants for safety-focused AI researchers. So, look, this guy is already rich to the tune of probably billions, and he's not looking to build, you know, the next big platform. So I think there is evidence that these sort of so-called AI tech billionaires really are trying to fix the world and do the right thing.
But a lot of them...
Well, I think there is the other side of the coin. You know, some of them are building these extremely efficient money machines effectively. And I think if you come with a promise that you want to change the world, or you want to solve, you know, a big problem that humanity has, that tends to be quite a good pitch for investors. And investors like spending money in those kinds of things. So I think you can talk about saving humanity and you can raise tens of billions of dollars at seemingly eye-watering, insane valuations. I would say, though, for some of these bigger problems, whether it's in climate or it's medicine or inequality, you do need loads and loads of money. So you need lots of capital. You need a visionary sort of person who probably sees the world a little bit differently, and someone who has quite a high risk tolerance, you know, could sort of lose it all. And then they need to have the talent, they need to get the talent to make this stuff happen. And inevitably, that pool of people tends to be quite small. I mean, in the AI world, it's almost exclusively white and male, which, of course, is problematic on its own. And maybe the questions for us are, us and the world, how do we keep, you know, these people accountable? How do we make sure that what they create is accessible for everyone and is can kind of equally be dished out, rather than sort of seemingly feel sometimes like, you know, these guys are all going to be the next trillionaires?
We keep them accountable by moaning about them on a podcast.
Good point.
Now, the thing I always keep thinking back to, and I've referenced Karen Howe a few times recently, but she made the really interesting point of a lot of these tech innovators, these great tech minds, maybe the money thing is almost out of the equation here. And but rather than trying to fix or save the world, they try and fix and solve the issues that matter to them. That's why we've got so many, you know, food delivery apps and so many dating apps and, you know, things that are really relevant to their lives rather than the masses who might be struggling with certain things. That does seem to be a bit of a trend.
Yeah. If you wanted to and you were a trillionaire, you could come and fix the NHS.
Yeah.
You know, with technology, you could make sure everyone's schooling is much better. So you're right. They tend to kind of hone on things. And also it's in their worldview, you know. free speech appears to be incredibly important for Elon Musk. So that's what he wants to focus on. You know, maybe we could, you know, figure out how we don't have people starving in the world, and that might be a better thing to spend money on. So yeah, it sometimes happens in the worldview of these people as well. Not a judgment, but it is probably some truth in that.
Yeah, so thanks for that question. Really interesting, James. Thanks for your brilliant answer. Next week, find out more, a lot more, about two of the big tech billionaires, Elon Musk and Sam Altman. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a very special edition next week all about them. It's going to be really, really fantastic. But for now, that is all we've got time for here on AI Haven't a Clue. A big thank you for listening. If you've got a question that you'd like James to tackle, do drop us an email at aihaventaclue@gmail.com. You can join the club at Patreon and support the podcast and keep up to date with the news via our Substack. AIHaventAClue.com has your links for both. We would love it if you would subscribe and rate the show and share this podcast with anyone that might want to find out a bit more about the world of AI. But for now, thanks to Team AI Having a Clue, Molly, David and Alex. Before you hear the greatest song AI has ever created, James, any final words?
AI Having a Clue, stay curious.
I haven't a clue, yeah, we're breaking the rules. Laughing with the bots while we're learning something new. Stay curious, stay cool, yeah, we're having a clue. When we're breaking down the news and a big thing or two. I haven't a clue, yeah, we're breaking the rules. Laughing with the bots while we're learning something new. Stay curious, stay cool, yeah, we're having a clue. When we're breaking down the news and a big thing or two. James in the lab coat, AI sensei mode. George asking questions like, wait, is this a code? Expert versus novice, yeah, you know how it's set. Funny thing is George still beat him in the challenge we had. The suck is suck that George really knows his stuff. James says that's not real, but we all know what's up. Mark Zuckerberg, he goes by the Zuck, yeah, it's true. Mind blown on the mic, what's an expert to do?